Hey guys, welcome to Taking Stock. Real excited for you all to listen to our conversation with Brandon Miller. Just quick backdrop for those that don't know Brandon. Brandon is a manager with Clarkson Consulting. We've had the opportunity to work together for the past 5 or 6 years. He is also, in addition to his client responsibilities with Clarkson, he leads our diversity council. I have learned so much from him throughout the years and really excited for you to hear his perspective and some of what he shares throughout our discussion. You'll hear he's going to talk about the historical evolution of diversity and inclusion throughout the years. He's going to talk about D&I in the workplace, the gap sometimes that we see in leadership, understanding the strategic imperative associated with D&I. He'll talk a little bit about change associated with it. And also, what is the business benefit to be realized for companies to adapt a more diverse and inclusive mindset throughout the organization? So really, really cool stuff. All right. So guys, enjoy our conversation with Brandon Miller. Hey, Brandon, welcome to Taking Stock.
Hey, what's going on?
How's everything going?
It's going well. It's going well. No complaints on my end. What about you?
All good. I'm super excited to chat with you. I know we've chatted in the past about this topic a ton. It goes without saying, I have huge respect and admiration for everything you do. You've taught me a lot about diversity and inclusion, and excited to share that with the rest of the group here. So I wanted to start with somewhat of a high level question. You've talked in the past about the historical evolution of diversity and inclusion, and how the topic has kind of transformed through the years. I'd love to get your perspective on the evolution overall, and in your opinion, was there a specific tipping point that made D&I the prominent topic or issue that it is today?
Yeah, no, absolutely, and I think it's important, and I'm glad we're starting off with this question and this topic, because it's important to understand kind of the history of diversity and inclusion and kind of the stages that we've evolved through to get to where we are now. Because as you said, it's a prominent topic that we're seeing all over the news. We're seeing, if you type in diversity and inclusion in Google, you're going to see all kind of different, websites, pages, articles, studies. But the term workforce diversity or like workplace diversity really didn't take hold till like the 1980s. But prior to that, if we're thinking about like the 1960s, that's when the topic, although not called workplace diversity, really started to take hold. If you think about like the mid-1960s when the Civil Rights Act was signed, and the EEOC, which is really the governing body for kind of workplace diversity standards, that was founded in 1965. And really the focus was on equal opportunity, equal access to the workplace. So coming out of that civil rights era, the focus was really on how do we make sure that no matter what your race, your gender, your orientation, your background is, you have that opportunity to work in the workplace. So that was really the foundation. The 1970s to 1980s, we really started to focus on more so assimilation. So it was a big pivot in American history. And granted, the diversity topic, a small caveat, is a global topic. This timeline is really focused on kind of North America and the United States, just to put that into context.
Yep.
But the 70s and 80s was really about kind of assimilation into the workplace and assimilating from kind of the US's past prior to the 1960s into that equality kind of era and movement of inclusion. In the 1990s, that's when we really started to see the rise of the topic of workplace diversity. And we're starting to see more occurrences of equality, especially as it relates to gender, sexual orientation, and background from like a socioeconomic standpoint. So the term starts to take hold. We're starting to see the processes that we put in place in the 1960s and 70s start to grow into like the Americans with Disability Act, mm-hmm. And these executive orders that we're starting to see. To answer your question though, on like what I personally think is the kind of the tipping point that really kind of took this topic off, I really think it's, you know, the early 2000s. I remember, and I wasn't in the workplace at the time, but I remember hearing about some like major kind of lawsuits, mm-hmm. In the early 2000s. So like Abercrombie and Fitch was one. I think they had a lawsuit around employment discrimination for racial ethnicity, and Coca-Cola had a big one, I think late 1990s, early 2000s as well. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to think about, well, why did this take such a hold, and why did we start to see so much about this? And when you think about, there's a lot of different dynamics at play. So you have kind of the timeline that we talked about. You have a new generation starting to enter the workforce. So as late Gen X, millennials start to enter the workplace, they are becoming the most diverse generation that we've seen in the past. So they have more passion around workplace diversity, making sure that the workplace is inclusive. And that was on the onset of the 2000s. And then you also have the rise of kind of access and visibility. So with the rise of the internet, social media, sure. Facebook, Twitter, as things start to happen as it pertains to workplace diversity, inclusion, or discrimination, we're starting to see that in real time. We're seeing that on Twitter. We're seeing the trending topics. We're seeing things like the Me Too movement, Black Lives Matter. Things are happening in real time. So there's more accountability and more onus on these organizations to do something about it. And I think that's why we're starting to see it all over the place, really.
Yeah, I love that perspective. And I think it's helpful, like you said, to take a step back and look at the evolution. And one of the things that I've learned a lot from you, in my mindset, like at least when you and I first started having discussions around this a few years ago, at least I always thought about it, diversity in terms of kind of who you hire. And you've taught me that it is much more about than who you hire. It's not a numbers thing. It's about an inclusive mindset. And I think there's been a shift when you look and things that people are talking about in social media, any research that you do, it is really not about just the status quo and having numbers reflect a diversity within your organization, but it's what are you doing with that diversity? And what are you doing to ensure that you have an inclusive mindset in the way that you structure your organization and the way that you innovate? And we'll talk a little bit about that. But to me, that there's been a shift that it's a lot much less about kind of the numbers game associated with this, but more about how do you adopt a more of an inclusive mindset within your organization?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think it's the right mindset to have. And if we're thinking back to when this topic first started, the focus was on diversity, and diversity is purely what are the numbers within your organization. And there's a lot of work in how are we going to hire for diversity? How are we going to increase, you know, the diverse mix within our organization? And these companies started, and I think the tech industry is a good kind of easy example of that, where these companies prioritize diversity, but 10 years later, you're not seeing a drastic impact, or you're not seeing these numbers change to the effect that they thought they would. And that's because they're missing the piece that you just talked to, and that's the inclusiveness. And once you introduce diverse individuals to your organization, how do they feel? Do they want to stay? Do they want to grow? Do they want to pursue their career there? If you're not creating that space for that, then they're going to leave and your numbers are going to go right back to where they were before, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that is it's a key concept.
Yeah. And so if we think about D&I in the workplace, like anything, it starts at the top. And from my perspective, I think leaders have struggled to realize the role and impact that they play in shaping inclusion and diversity throughout the organization. Why do you think this is? Why do you think that leadership isn't moving as quickly and or adapting a lot of the mindset and the right practices to ensure that you have a diverse and inclusive workplace? Just because I think about like leadership and with anything, it starts at the top.
Yeah.
And within organizations that we work with, I think maybe it was the millennial thing that you referenced. I think that a lot of the younger generation understands how important it is. Is it that leadership doesn't, you know, that they haven't grown up with this mindset, that it's hard for them to instill that within the organization? I'm not quite sure if the message is making it all the way up to the, you know, the C-level suites of a lot of key organizations.
Yeah, I think it's two things. So when I talk about like diversity and inclusion, I usually say, you know, it's a matter of the head and the heart. So The head is how you're thinking, how you're acting. The heart is how you feel. And that's what makes D&I so tricky, because it's complex. We're humans at the end of the day. So I think the first thing to answer your question is leaders and organizations oftentimes grew up kind of growing through corporate America. So when referring back to talking through the timeline, if you started your career in the 70s or the 80s or the 60s, you grew up with a certain perspective when it comes to D&I in the workplace. Your organization had certain values and foundations that were built on the climate during that time period. So a lot of leaders and organizations grew up in that company or that organization doing things a certain way, built on certain processes, standards, language that was developed years ago. So it's hard to, you know, snap your fingers and just kind of change how you grew in a company or an organization or what you're used to. Mm-hmm. So I think taking a systemic lens on what are the actual business processes that need to be changed, or the language in our job descriptions that need to be changed, or our company culture that needs to be changed, and kind of take a retroactive look at that and then think about how you want to change that moving forward. It's not just, you know, snap your fingers and it's that easy. It's something that you really have to work at and evaluate. And then the second piece on a like personal level, change is hard at the end of the day, no matter if you're implementing a new technology or you're changing a process or you're trying to change how people interact with one another in that company culture. It's not easy. And what I see with a lot of leaders and organizations, it's hard to just take that first step and to kind of say, all right, I realize we have a problem or we have an opportunity. We need to do something about it. Or it's hard to say, I don't know what the answer is, but we need to figure it out, and say that in front of your company or your organization. So I think that's the other piece, is just how do you take that first step to create that change and to start moving and acting?
Yeah, and there's obviously so many different things that leaders could do once they make that leap in terms of, you know, who they're hiring, how they're promoting, how they're staffing teams. I want to think about from the consumer's perspective. So you've shared with me a bunch that, you know, more than ever, consumers are going to gravitate towards brands and companies that reflect their core values. And it's not just about the individual product. It's what your company represents, what your brand represents, and all about, you know, what that brand means to the consumer. And consumers, especially kind of the millennials, like you referenced, want to be associated with companies that are committed to diversity and inclusion. So this isn't about just doing what's right. For companies, this is about how do you compete in the market? And I'd love to hear your perspective on how diversity and inclusion could help companies innovate, how diversity and inclusion could help companies design, how it helps shape and impact their go-to-market strategy. Because those are some ways in which, again, diversity and inclusion, it's just, forget about it being the right thing. It also is really good business.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, and I think there's a number of studies that have been done on how the mix of your teams from a diversity perspective, and remember, diversity isn't just race and gender. There's a lot of different dimensions of diversity when it comes to business units, background, socioeconomic class. Like, there's all of these different dimensions. And the studies show, and numerous studies show, that the more diverse your teams are, the more innovative they are, the quicker that they are to make decisions, the more likely they are to make better decisions than homogeneous teams. And the more likely your organization or that team is to capture new markets. So, you know, the studies are all there. If you do a quick Google search, you're going to see them. The hard part is trying to figure out what that mix is and how to make that fit into your business strategy, into how you staff and organize your business units. But it's there. And to how you started off the question, the U.S., and I'm going to speak to the U.S., we are becoming more and more diverse. I think by 2045, I can't remember what the exact year is, we're going to be a majority minority country. Gen Z is, to your point, when they're looking for jobs, they are 60% are looking for companies that have diversity and inclusion as a part of the business's core values or core business strategy. Mm-hmm. As consumers, we're looking for organizations that feel or companies that feel like they're selling to me. So we talk about personalized medicine and we talk about direct to consumer strategy. If I don't feel like you understand me or your products are marketed towards me as an individual, the less likely I am to buy or patronize your business. So I think there's so many different aspects in which diversity helps provide a business case from a financial sense and from an engagement sense that companies really need to tap into around the wheel.
Yeah, you said engagement. If I put my consumer products hat on, consumer engagement is really one of the key buzzwords in the industry. And how are you able to engage with consumers if you don't understand them from a diverse perspective, and if you don't have a diverse mix of employees who are helping shape, again, whatever your innovation strategy, design strategy is, marketing strategy is, it's absolutely critical. Any other thoughts that you would have in terms of what companies need to do to get started? So let's say I'm a leader in an organization, and we realize we've got some work to do. Where do you start? What are some of the first steps that you should take?
I think two steps that can be done in parallel are, one, from a conversation standpoint, is just start having conversations with your employees and with your consumers. Mm-hmm. I think oftentimes as leaders, we want to take a bird's eye view and assume what we think the issues are at face value from our vantage point. But until you can just sit down and have candid, vulnerable, and honest conversations with your employees and with your consumers, you don't really understand or can really know or empathize with what's going on kind of on the ground. So I think that's one thing that's easy to do. It takes courage, but it's something that's easy to do. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, from more of a system standpoint, is to take an audit of the diversity and inclusion climate at your company. So that might be through looking at individual processes. So we talked about how we hire. What is our talent acquisition strategy? And are there any aspects of, you know, implicit bias or unconscious bias that we're not even thinking about in how we're hiring? When we're promoting, let's take a look at our process for how we promote and how we reward our employees, and see if there's any things that we might just be overlooking or we don't necessarily kind of see on the surface. And then with people, doing some type of, you know, diversity climate survey or, you know, kind of get some data behind what's really going on. So you can really be people focused, but data driven when it comes to your diversity strategy.
Yeah, that's great. Great steps and actions for our listeners to think about. Brandon, I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation as always. I appreciate you taking some time out of your busy schedule, and look forward to connecting again soon. All right.
No, absolutely. Thanks for having me on here, and excited for this.
All right. Talk soon.
All righty.
Thanks for listening to my chat with Brandon. He's such a talented individual, and his passion just certainly comes through. Check him out. He's all over social media. He's written a book. And reach out to him. He'd love to talk more about the topic of diversity and inclusion. And appreciate you all listening, and look forward to future conversations here on Taking Stock.